Radio Prague News.
A number of key bills are on the table as Czech MPs return after a seasonal break. The film Taman has received the most nominations in the Czech Lion Awards. And Petra Kvitová has reached the semi-finals at the Australian Open. The Chamber of Deputies has begun its first session of the year. Among a number of important items to be discussed are possible changes to the law on insolvency, intended to make it easier for people to get out of debt. One proposal would allow even the worst-off members of society, including the low-paid pensioners and single parents, to declare personal bankruptcy. Also on MPs' agenda are benefits in the initial days of an illness. The Senate returned a bill that would see those unable to work for health reasons receiving payments from day one, not after 3 days, as at present. Senators argue that the current legislation keeps the sickness rate down. However, the Minister of Labour and Social Affairs, Jana Maláčová of the Social Democrats, says employees shouldn't be punished for being unwell. The Constitutional Court has refused to hear a complaint taken by a former police officer who was dismissed after learning that he had contracted HIV. Judges said that the petition was premature and that the police president would first have to address the issue of possible discrimination. When his employers learned that the officer was HIV positive, they had him undergo a medical examination. The doctor concluded he was unfit to continue serving and he was let go in 2011. The Prague 7 District Court ruled last year that the sacking was lawful as the policeman was incapable of doing his job. The Prague authorities will begin repairs of the city's Libang Bridge this year, Deputy Mayor Adam Scheinherr said on Tuesday. Initial work will focus on parts of the road bridge that aren't directly connected to traffic. The renovation work will be carried out according to a plan due for publication by the Czech Technical University by the end of March. Libang Bridge, which was built in the late 1920s, is in a hazardous state. There was talk in the past of demolishing it completely. Taman by Andrei Trojan has received the most nominations with 13 for this year's Czech Lion Film Awards. The Hester Man, directed by Andrei Havelka, has 10 nominations, as does Winter Flies by Olmo Omerzu. Jan Palach by Robert Sedláček is in the running in 8 categories. The Czech Lions are voted on by members of the Czech Film and Television Academy. The winners will be announced on the 23rd of March in Prague. Petra Kvitová has reached the semi-finals of the Australian Open. The Czech women's tennis number one overcame Australia's Ashleigh Barty 6-1, 6-4 in 70 minutes on Tuesday, continuing a very impressive run at the first Grand Slam tournament of the season. Kvitová hasn't dropped a single set on her route to the last four in Melbourne. And finally, the weather. There should be bright spells and some snow in the Czech Republic on Wednesday, with temperatures of up to minus 2 degrees Celsius. Daytime highs should gradually climb to above freezing point at the weekend. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Brian Kennedy. Coming up in today's program, we talk to the newly named Knight Mayor of Prague ahead of his fact-finding trip to Amsterdam, a comprehensive study on how air pollution is impacting the health of people in the heavily industrialized region of northeast Moravia is now underway, and we talk to Czech web designer Jiří Šiftář, whose photo essays of his adopted home, London, helped propel him to Instagram stardom. All that is coming up shortly, so please stay with us. A special role has been created to regulate the excesses of Prague's nightlife. City Hall councillors this week elected Jan Stern as Knight Mayor. A special commission comprised of district and police representatives will be helping him out. But the new man in charge of Prague After Dark says he wants to first analyze the situation in detail and meet his counterpart in Amsterdam for inspiration. Tom McEncrow has the details.
Tasteless, noisy, and an open-air museum. These are just some of the terms Prague's angry residents use for the capital centre. Many of them see it as overfilled with drunken tourists and shady business. One of the ways the new City Hall leadership wants to tackle the issue is through a special night commission that will analyse the situation and propose systemic solutions. On Monday, Jan Stern was elected head of the commission and he is now being referred to as the city's nightlife mayor. He opened up on some of the plans he has in store.
We believe that the nightlife is a very important value for the city, for modern city and its inhabitants, but it's also creating a set of specific problems that need to be targeted. So as I see it, our work is not about regulating, but rather about cultivating. The most pressing issue at the moment is, of course, the very city center, the Dlouhá Street and the surroundings, where the nightlife and everything that is negative about nightlife is concentrated over there.
Dlouhá is one of the streets that lead into Old Town Square, a popular sightseeing destination for many of the capital's visitors. One of the powers now given to the Night Commission is the ability to come out with orders regulating closing times for bars and restaurants. However, Mr. Stern says that including local bar and club owners in finding a solution is key to retaining life within the centre, while also making it a place where residents can sleep at night.
Trying to include the bar and club owners in the situation, like we would like them to be part of the solution of the situation outside of the clubs in the streets. And also I would like to mention that we are looking for new ways how to communicate directly with the tourists that will enable us to explain them directly what is okay and what is not okay to do in the streets of Prague.
Prague's new politician of the night also says he wants to meet his counterpart in Amsterdam, the city that pioneered the idea, in order to get some inspiration.
I think that Amsterdam is really similar to Prague in many ways, in the type of tourists that are coming there with the problems with the historical city centre that they are trying to solve. So I'm going to Amsterdam next week to meet with this nightmayor over there, and we'll see if there are some specific measures that we will try to implement that are now working in Amsterdam.
Tom McEncrow speaking there to Prague's new night mayor, Jan Stern. Moving on, a unique 5-year project is currently underway in the Czech Republic, focusing on the long-term impact of air pollution on people living in northeast Moravia, a heavily industrial region. Over the course of the project, scientists will be comparing the health data of thousands of people from different regions of the country, focusing on those who are most vulnerable to air pollution. Ruth Frankova has the story.
A woman from the northeast city of Ostrava is currently suing the Czech Republic for having developed cancer, which also killed her husband several years ago, arguing that her illness had been caused by the heavy air pollution in the region. Indeed, smog regulations are now in force in several parts of the region, with levels of dust particles several times exceeding permitted norms. The impact of air pollution on the most vulnerable groups of people living in the heavily polluted region of northeast Moravia, such as newborn babies or people working in the outdoors, is the focus of a new study which is currently underway at the University of Ostrava. In the course of the next 5 years, scientists from Ostrava, together with their colleagues from Prague, Brno and České Budějovice, will be comparing fertility rates, incidence of respiratory diseases, but also changes in the genetic code in around 8,000 people. The research costs some 250 million crowns and is co-financed by the European Union. Radim Šram from the Academy's Institute of Experimental Medicine heads the project.
We are studying newborns and their mothers, comparing them in district of Karvina with district of České Budějovice in southern Bohemia. This group is certainly the most sensitive to air pollution, what we observe already in previous studies. Another group are city policemen. This is the only group working, let's say, in open air, so it means that if there is something wrong, this is certainly the most sensitive group of population for this effect. Third group is so-called runners, to see how their, let's say, higher physical activity is affecting their morbidity.
Studies focusing on the link between poor air quality and higher incidence of certain illnesses such as respiratory and cardiovascular diseases have already been carried out in the past, but none of them have been so extensive as this one, explains Mr. Schramm.
According to knowledge which we had from previous periods, we are now studying certain topics in greater detail. For example, blood and urine of newborns and mothers. Until now, we followed only metabolites of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, but now we will analyze also other contaminants which may affect their health. So this is really quite a new research.
The research will officially conclude in 2022, but scientists are hoping to continue monitoring their subjects even further to establish new links between air pollution and people's health.
Ruth Frankova reporting. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for our main feature. In this week's one-on-one, Ian Willoughby talks to Jiří Šiftář, a London-based web designer whose photos have made him among the most popular Czechs on Instagram today.
With more than 250,000 followers, Jiří Šiftář must be one of the most popular Czechs on Instagram. Going by the name Jira on the photograph-sharing service, he's mainly known for stunning pictures of his adopted home of London. I met Jiří Šiftář at a restaurant in the city near his workplace at Lloyds Bank, where he designs web interfaces for customers. And I first asked him whether he'd been into photography as a child.
Yes, that's a funny thing, because in communist times, as we call it now, there was very limited amount of hobbies one could pick. Photography was one of them, because East Germany was producing some kind of, I guess, some knockoffs of DSLRs, not DSLRs, SLRs back then. My dad was quite interested in photography, and so he got me a Russian two-lens knockoff of Flexaret called Lubitel. I was about 6 years old when I first tried to take some pictures, and then in my dad's dark room to develop the film and pictures. It was really magical and exciting back then.
Tell us about your early days in the UK. Why exactly did you come here?
It was really to challenge myself. I was kind of fed up with atmosphere in the 90s in Czech. It was a little bit of wilderness. I wanted to try different culture, different approach, different relationships with people, based on something more traditional, maybe. Some country with long-standing history of democracy, if I say it this way. But basically to challenge myself, to see if I can do that.
And England hasn't let you down?
Absolutely not. I'm really happy that I did that step, and I feel only sorry that I didn't do that earlier, to be honest.
What exactly do you do? Because I looked at your profile online, and as somebody who doesn't know much about design, I couldn't quite understand it.
Well, yeah, it doesn't have that much tradition, but it's picking up in Czech as well. It's in general, it's called user experience design. It's designing mostly digital products, but it could be even a fridge or washing machine in the end. And it's all about how we interact with those devices. Put it simple way, I'm the advocate for customer, for the user, when it comes to designing products. And I take their view, and I'm trying to help design those products in a way that it's very simple to use, very easy to understand. For anybody, you will make less errors when using these things, and you will actually feel delightful and delighted. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
The main reason I wanted to speak to you is because you're absolutely huge on Instagram, with over 250,000 followers. How have you achieved that?
I got that question many times, and every time I have to give quite a disappointing answer. Just hard work. There was no magic, there was no trick. I've never been a suggested user, for example. I only got followers through my pictures. First 3 years I was lucky, because in those times exposure page, or explore page, how it's been called back then, was displaying around 400 most popular pictures at that given moment. And because there wasn't that many people on Instagram posting amazing pictures, then I was lucky enough to get on that page with almost every picture I posted. And that was bringing me lots of organic followers, people who really wanted to follow me for my pictures. And they didn't know me, but they liked those pictures, and it was growing for years, slowly but steadily. So yeah, I reached 250,000.
What has been your single most popular photo?
It was probably some picture of Big Ben, I guess, or something very iconic in London. And I must admit, I probably put some fake snowflakes over it. And it probably took people's hearts, and they were very, very happy with that picture, so they expressed it in likes.
Is there a particular kind of photo or subject matter that just works on Instagram that people like?
There's really many ways how to get people's attention. There's lots of niche areas where you can find audience. So it's really, there's no general rule. But if you moving on with photography and you don't want to do something specific like portraits or bikes or whatever, if you're really into kind of places, then my recipe is always try to depict the place in a way that people will imagine themselves in that place, because that's what ignites the imagination in them, and that's the feeling they're probably looking for. And they're like, at least for me it works.
What kind of camera do you use?
I've been using DSLR quite early in the days, I would say 4 or 5 years back. So I don't know if it's a product placement if I say the brand. You can always cut it out. So yeah, currently I'm using Nikon D810, quite advanced model. I'm also using mirrorless Fuji, now a little bit older, but still pretty good. And sometimes I'm still taking shots on my iPhone.
And how much of the final product comes from the actual photo you take out in the field, and how much is post-production?
I would say it's probably 50-50. You have to spot the right angle, you have to find the right composition when you're there. That's something you can't really avoid, or you can't go without that. You have to take a good picture. But still, that picture might be quite blunt in terms of colors and dynamics. And yeah, I always love the process of editing on the phone. Lately, I'm editing on computer in Lightroom, because it's really powerful tool. But yes, if you want picture to really stand out and be very eye candy, you definitely need to do something post.
Looking through your photos, you have so many wonderful pictures from London, of parks and other spots. Have you learned a lot about London from going out and looking for such pretty places?
Absolutely. I can recommend this as a way to get to know London. I know many people who lived in London for many years, and they never seen the places I visited or I depict in my pictures, because they have no reason to discover them. The camera gave me the reason. The first 3 or 4 years in London, I've been basically out every weekend with my camera, hunting the new places and pictures.
Also, I presume the fact that London is so internationally popular and loved, that must also really help you.
It was definitely a boost. Before, I lived 4.5 years in Poole, which is in Dorset. It's on the coast, it has sea and lots of beautiful places. But when I moved to London and I started posting London on Instagram, it was definitely a huge boost and a huge interest for my audience.
Is what you do in any way sponsored by companies, or is there any kind of commercial aspect like that?
That totally caught us by surprise, I can tell, because I was on Instagram from day one, which was in 2010, and first commercial offers start coming in 2012, actually about a few months after I moved to London. And it was surprising, we didn't expect it. The social media marketing didn't exist that much before, or at least it wasn't that visible or accessible to everyone. And since then it took really, really new heights, and I've been approached by many, many companies, asked to do lots of different campaigns, but I was always taking it as a great opportunity to visit new places and do something I wouldn't be able to do without those opportunities.
And in concrete terms, how does that work? Will they pay for you to go somewhere, or do they want product placement, or how exactly does it work?
The types of corporations are very different, but yes, in the first years it was mostly, we will take you to some beautiful place, you will have really nice experience, and if you will post something from that, we will be happy, and please use this hashtag. Simple as that. In London, because it's really full of opportunities and companies and brands. Also, there was some other type of deals where they wanted me to attend events, for example, and promote some particular products or things. I wasn't always happy, and I turned down a lot of these kind of deals to simply promote something which I didn't believe into. If it was something I really loved and I was happy to use, it was a no-brainer for me. So, yeah, that's a lot of sorts of different deals there.
Have you published many photos from the Czech Republic, and what kind of reaction do they get?
I feel a little bit bad about this, because during my time in England and my, let's say, Instagram fame, I visited Czech Republic and Prague specifically a few times, but I never posted that many pictures from there. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't want to explain exactly my feelings towards New Prague now, how it's been refurbished and kind of redecorated. It's not exactly my style. I think that something has been kind of covered with the new paint in Prague. It's missing that kind of old vintage style or vibe for me. So, yeah, I didn't post that much.
Why is your Instagram name Jira? I presume it comes from Yuri in some way.
In early 90s, when all the internet things started, we all had to come up with some nickname for all these internet discussion forums and services. And yeah, for a few years it was kind of a funny thing to transcribe your name, which was Jira. My friends called me Jira, to try to put it in kind of English spelling. So that's how it happened. I only learned much, much later that Jira, in exactly this spelling, is some sort of Indian cumin.
I was just thinking also on my way to meet you here today that you are probably unusual for a Czech. Any Czech living in the UK will have maybe trouble with their name, but you have not one, but three Hacheks in your name. What do people call you here? Or how do they pronounce your name here, Robert?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I basically had to give up on all diacritics in my name. So when people read it, they basically end up saying Jiri Siftar.
And that edition of One on One, featuring a London-based web designer and Instagram star, Jiri Siftar, first aired last January. It also brings us to the end of our program here today on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about our content, please do get in touch. Our email address is english@radio.cz. You can also reach us on Facebook or Twitter. We'd be glad to hear from you. For now, I'm Brian Kennedy saying thanks for listening and goodbye.